Okay, so I'm really excited to bring this message today, especially after the worship this morning. Sorry, I always have issues with the mic every time I'm preaching. Okay, yes, lovely. Especially after that time of worship, thank you, Teresa, and the band. I feel that a lot of what I'm going to be talking about or bringing in this message really came out through the worship. So that's been absolutely amazing. So this is our new series looking at Exodus and the lessons that we can learn from Exodus. And this morning, I'm looking mainly from chapters 2 to 3, a little bit of 4, and I'm looking at commissioning and insecurities. So I'm sure we are familiar with the Exodus story, but just to sort of summarize where we are in chapter 2 and 3, we are told that the Pharaoh is very concerned about the growing number of Israelites and is concerned that if they continue to grow, they could join their enemies and overthrow Egypt. So he decides that all Israelite baby boys should be killed. And Moses is born, his mother hides him for a while and then puts him in a basket, places him on the bank of the Nile, where he's then found by the Pharaoh's daughter, and then she brings him up. Then we sort of fast forward later on to when Moses is a man about 40 years old, and we see that he witnesses an incident where one of the Egyptians beats one of the Israelites, and he takes matters into his own hands and he kills the Egyptian. And then another day, he witnesses two Israelites arguing with each other, and he sort of says, "Why are you fighting? You know, your brothers, you know, don't fight." And the response is, "Well, who are you? And are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian?" And so Moses basically flees. He decides to run away because people are going to find out what he's done. Now, when we are introduced to this 40-year-old Moses, he appears to have a natural sense of calling and leadership, and he appears quite confident. And initially, he would look like a good, obvious choice for a leader who would lead God's people out of Egypt. And in fact, if you was hearing the Exodus story for the first time, or you was talking to someone who doesn't know much about the story, but the only thing they're aware of is there's a man called Moses who leads God's people out of Egypt. The picture they may have of this leader might be this 40-year-old Moses. Someone who, despite being a Hebrew, has great power and influence, having been brought up in the palace and Pharaoh's home. So he's basically a prince, and there's that sense of irony as well. You know, he is one of those people that Pharaoh was trying to get rid of, and actually he grows in Pharaoh's home. But someone who has a lot of influence, someone who seems to have a lot of zeal and passion to save, you know, his people one Hebrew at a time, even if it means taking matters into his own hands. And some commentators suggest that it's very likely that at this time he would have been carving a political career for himself. But in Acts chapter 7, verse 22, when Stephen is talking about Moses, he describes Moses. He says, "Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action." So this is a picture of a powerful leader, a strong leader. However, Moses' leadership of God's people doesn't come about in the way that we would expect it to, and certainly not in a way that Moses would expect it to. So when we meet this Moses, he is trying to make himself a leader. He is trying to lead in his own strength, taking matters into his own hands. And as a result, he ends up going on the run to escape justice, ends up being a fugitive, a criminal, a refugee. So Moses flees Midian, which is a dry and uncultivated land, very different from what Egypt was. He gets married and spends 40 years looking after his father-in-law's flock of sheep. And so this is our leader now, from prince to shepherd. And he spends 40 years living what seems to be a pretty mundane life. But during these 40 years, it's clear that God is doing a work in him. A work of humbling, a time of training, of learning how to look after somebody else's sheep before he could shepherd God's people. And it's only after this 40-year training period that we see God commission 80-year-old Moses. 80-year-old humbled Moses. And this is our leader now. So God appears to Moses in a burning bush, and he tells him of his plans. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So that's chapter 3, verse 10. And Moses' response is perhaps not the response we would have expected from the 40-year-old Moses. And maybe if God had appeared to Moses back then, when he was still in Egypt, his response would have been enthusiastic and excited and ready to go. But Moses doesn't react like that now. And he seems reluctant, he seems to have lost his self-belief, and he's left with a lot of insecurities. So his response to God is, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Then he goes on to say, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers have sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I tell them? What do I do if they don't believe me or listen to me and say the Lord did not appear to you? Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. So he comes up with all his excuses, lists all the insecurities he can think of, until finally he says, pardon your servant, Lord. Please just send someone else. So Moses is plagued with insecurities and he's skeptical about God's commission because he is focusing on himself and what he sees as his inadequacy, his inability, ineffectiveness, incompetence, and he forgets the most crucial detail, which is that God will help him. And when God responds to each of Moses' objections, God seeks to shift Moses' eyes from himself onto God. So the first objection, who am I? God's response, I will be with you. So it's not about who you are, Moses. It's about me. I'm God and I'm going to be with you. So that shift. What should I tell them? God says, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you, has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. So what should I tell them? It's not about what you are going to tell them. It's about me. I am the great I am. And I am your message. That is what you're going to tell them. So again, that shift. What if they do not believe me? And then God gives Moses three signs to point towards God. So the rod becoming a snake and coming back into a rod again. Moses' hand appearing to have leprosy and then healed again. The water turning into blood. And each of these signs signified in different ways that Egypt and its power, its authority, its wealth is subject to God. So the response to what if they do not believe me is, well, I'm showing them me. It's not about you. It's not about what you've got to say. It's about me. These are the signs to point to me. I have never been eloquent. And then the Lord's response is, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who makes them sight or who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. So from Moses, never being eloquent, being, well, actually, it's not about your eloquence, it's about me, because I am going to give you the words. I am going to speak through you. It's not about you, Moses. And then even when Moses eventually says, you know, just send someone else, God compassionately has already figured this out. And he says, well, what about your brother Aaron? He's already on his way. He's going to help you. So God's already made provision to give him a companion. So he says, what about your brother Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you and will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. So even in sending a companion, a helper, the focus is still God. I am the one that's going to give both of you what to say and what to do. So you are still the person I'm commissioning. It's still you. I'm sending you. But I am the one that is going to work through you. And one thing I noted is that God's response here is not to make Moses feel competent. It's not to tell him that the task is easier than it looks or to be positive. It's not even to assure him that he's going to succeed. God's response is him, God. Shift your eyes from yourself and look at me, God. And I actually reflected a bit. I thought, well, if John, my husband John, came to me and said, you know what, Rachel, I've got this thing I need to do and I don't think I can do it. I don't really think I'm capable or things like that, talking about his insecurities. What would my response be? Would it be, okay, let's look at this, let's break it down. Actually, it's not as hard as it might seem. If we do it like this, you can do it. Or actually, no, you can do it. You've got this, you're capable, you're able. Or, well, let's be positive. You know, if we start with a negative mindset, it's going to affect how you get on with it. And the truth is, it's probably going to be a combination of all of the above. But the answer is God. When we come to God with our insecurities, the answer is God. That is the response. And it might sound a bit egotistical. I mean, I don't know if you could really call God egotistical anyway, but it's done with a father's heart. You know, if you imagine a young child come to their parent and say, you know, I've been hearing a lot of things about rising costs of living. Are we going to be able to pay for electricity? Are you going to have enough money to buy my school uniform? Are you sure that we're going to be okay? As a parent, your response is going to be, hey, that's not for you to worry about. You don't worry about that. I've got this. I'm going to take care of it. You know, you don't need to worry. You don't need to think, know how. I've got this. And almost the more concerned they're going to be, the less detail you're going to give them. You're not going to sort of break down your financials or anything like that. You're just going to tell them to rest in that knowledge that you have got this. And in the same way, if God commissions us for something and we are concerned about how we're going to be able to do it because of our insecurities, because of our weaknesses and inadequacies, and we can't see with our natural eyes how this is going to work out, God's response is, I've got this. And one of the commentaries that I looked at puts it this way. God doesn't cover our weaknesses or pretend that they are not there or irrelevant, but rather he continues his will and plans in spite of our flaws, our faults and inabilities. So when we say to God, I am not adequate, I am not competent, God's response is, I am. And I say that, you know, alluding to that name of God that God gave Moses. I am who I am. God has everything that we need to achieve whatever task he has set before us. So we don't have to have it all. We don't need to be adequate. We don't need to be competent because God is, and more than that, you know, it's not I, but Christ. And this, the first worship song that we sang this morning had a lot of this word in as well. It's not I, but it's Christ. It's God with us that's going to do that work. And this is why Moses went through the 40 years of training and humbling, because he needed to get to a place where he knows that actually it's not him who can do this, but it's God working through him. And that's why it's not the 40-year-old Moses still in Egypt that God appears in a burning bush, because I reckon that if God had appeared to Moses then, Moses would have gone in his own strength, in his youth, in his power. But instead, it's now, when Moses has been humbled, when he's 80, when he has all of these uncertainties and insecurities, it's only now that we see him being commissioned. And it's because that's when he knows that he has to completely rely on God and God's power. And we see a number of examples in the Bible of God commissioning people, and where they respond with the similar kind of reluctance and uncertainty. And God's response is the same. So an example is Gideon. So God appears to Gideon and says, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hands. Am I not sending you?" And Gideon's response is, "Pardon me, my lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." And the Lord answered, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites and leave none alive. I will be with you." That is always God's response. He will be with us. And I just wanted us to just, for a moment, just reflect personally. Is there anything that you have heard God direct you to or commission you for that you have felt inadequate about? And it doesn't have to be something as big as, you know, leading God's people out of oppression. It could be, you know, serving in kids' work, or it could be anything. You know, but is there anything that God has called you to be or to do that you have felt you can't do it? You don't have the necessary skills. If so, I want you to ask yourselves, where are your eyes fixed? Where are your eyes fixed? Because there are a lot of circumstances that we can use to hold us back. Our age, our background, our race, our education or lack of, our experience or lack of. But when God commissions us, it's time for us to shift our eyes from those circumstances and those insecurities and fix our eyes on God. Because he is with us and he will help us. So don't discount yourself. Contrasting that, it's also good to sort of reflect and think and recognize if there's any situation where we're just going full steam ahead, our own agenda, without submitting to God first. Maybe we feel overly confident in our ability, and actually we feel we don't really need God in this area. So I'm thinking about the example of that 40-year-old Moses who tried to do everything himself pre the humbling. And this could be any area of our lives. It could be our homes, our finances, our jobs, our family. But if so, we need to stop that and commit it to God. You know, don't leave God behind. We need God in all that we are doing. And then I guess the last sort of thing to think about as well is sometimes the person God chooses for something is not the person we would think it would be. But there is no better person than God's choice. And if I didn't know anything about the way God works or the Exodus story, and I was presented with a picture of strong, influential 40-year-old Moses versus insecure, reluctant 80-year-old Moses, I would say that the former would make the better leader. But that's not how God works. So God chooses the best person, not the person we perceive to be the best. So let's not discount others. So those are the three sort of take homes that really jumped out to me as I was looking into this and preparing this message. So I just want to pray as I end on those three points. Dear God, we just thank you that you are such an amazing God and that you never leave us nor forsake us. We thank you for the plans that you have for us. And Lord, for any of us here who are perhaps uncertain about whether or not we can do what you say we can do, whether or not we can believe your vision and believe your words, we just pray that you will just give us not confidence, but Godfidence, that we will believe you and your word, that we will shift our eyes from all of those limitations and weaknesses and fix them on you, because you are the one to help us through. So we just, and if there's anyone here who perhaps started with our eyes fixed on you, Lord, but as time has gone on, become more and more aware of our own limitations and weaknesses, I pray that you help us to adjust that and fix our eyes back on you again. Lord, for those of us who perhaps are going about things in our own strength, Lord, just help us to recognize this and commit this to you, Lord, because we know that we can't do anything without you, Lord. So help us to just resubmit this to you and go in your strength rather than our own. And for those of us who judge the decisions that you have made and the people that you have chosen, just pray that you forgive us and remind us that your ways are not our ways and that we will trust you, because you are mighty God, the great I am. So just thank you, Lord. Amen.